few hours ago, the Enterprise picked up a distress call from the USS Bowman.
I need you to let me out of here.
You're a prisoner. Your orders carry no weight anymore.
Cadet, I am giving you a direct order to release me.
That only applies to an active captain.
When this is all done, you will never see the inside of a starship again.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Or... Oh, I'm sorry, I was cut off quite short.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And we're here this time to talk about the latest Short Trek episode, Ask Not...
Cam, when they first announced Short Treks more than a year ago,
yeah,
was this essentially what you were expecting?
Yes.
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 Essentially, like, kind of almost cheap, sort of, like, one-set deals that would be over and done with in about 9.5 minutes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember when we did the first one, Runaway, and I was not crazy about Runaway, neither were you. But for all of its flaws as a compelling short story, it at least felt like its own thing.
And it didn't seem cheap either.
No.
It seemed like a regular, I don't know, two scenes out of Star Trek Discovery.
Right. But at least enclosed in a little arc there. So it actually felt like its own story. Whereas, like, this thing, Ask Not, which... I think maybe I had an unfair amount of hope for, just because, you know, Anson Mount has been amazing as Pike, and this was going to be his Short Trek. And we saw the number one was really good. You know, the last one, the Tribble one, was really fantastic.
And he had a great scene in there, too. He had great scenes in both of those Short Treks.
Yeah, and so I was super excited for this one, and this felt almost like a deleted scene, but not only that, we'd also talked in the Trouble with Edward about how this is what the Short Treks need to be. Interesting creators coming in and doing what they want with the Star Trek brand in a way where it can kind of be cut off from a general series that has a little more of a homogenized sort of feel to the show, like trying to keep the same tone week to week or whatever. And this, to me, feels not like that at all. This really did feel like, well, guys, I don't know, here you go.
But what's the cheapest thing that we can do?
Yes.
Yeah, so Cam, the big twist, the revelation there, I want to ask this. Yeah. How long did it take you to figure it out? And of course, in all fairness, I want you to measure this in microseconds.
Right. You mean to figure out that this was all training exercise?
Yes.
I'll say that it was one of the things that bounced around in my head, but I was also like, is this an imposter, Pike?
Oh,
I wasn't
really
sure if that there was something there. So I was like, it's one or the other, but I couldn't quite figure it out until the end.
See, as soon as I noticed that she was wearing a cadet badge, I didn't.
Right.
It was only the second time that I watched it that I realized that she was referred to as a cadet.
Mm-hmm.
But then I noticed that her badge was a cadet badge.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is obviously a training exercise. And so then everything that Pike was saying, like, and your husband's on that ship.
Sure.
I was just kind of burying my face in my hands at that point. I'm just like, oh, I see exactly what this is. And it just seemed really corny to me the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, yeah, Anson Mount's Pike was acting so strange and off model that that's why I was at least like, well, maybe it's some sort of imposter. Is this Mirror Universe Pike or something? Like,
yeah.
What is going on here? But I will say the mystery was not interesting to me. I was more just like, oh, wow, is this what this is going
to
be?
Well, essentially for those that would be listening to our podcast before watching Ask Not,
yeah.
Pike shows
the
up.
The podcast is a lot longer than the episode of, of the Short Trek is, so.
Yeah, but Pike shows up in a brig.
Yeah.
With a stupid mask on.
Okay, that mask was amazing. I want to get back to that.
And he's trying to get a cadet to release him from the brig.
Yeah.
And she doesn't. So after about 7 minutes... he's like, test complete.
Because the Tholians are attacking Tyler.
Yeah, and she had been attacked. She and her husband had been attacked before by the Tholians.
Only survivors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And guess what? Her husband knew what he was signing up for, so she doesn't care about her husband's life. I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
I can I be honest? I would be gazing at Anson Mount and be like, okay, sir, yes, I want to go save my partner.
Like, I would just have nothing but questions about that helmet.
Okay, well, let's talk about that helmet.
Okay. What is the... Okay, so they say, like, why were you wearing that helmet? It's so that, you know, they wouldn't see who it was being marched in there. Who created this helmet and why?
Cam, it's the same people that created those suction cups in Star Trek IV.
Sure.
The one who created the Tribble vacuum,
right,
in The Trouble with Edward.
Yeah.
It's like the same stupid device creator in all of Star Trek.
Because we've seen in Star Trek, generally prisoners are treated better than the way we would treat prisoners, say, nowadays. And so I have a hard time imagining that these helmets would be in existence.
Yeah, just like Chief O'Brien in Hard Time.
Okay, maybe not him. That was an alien prison, though. A little different. But I have a hard time believing Starfleet...
Oh, wow. Nice one.
I have a hard time...
What a callback.
That's the biggest laugh you'll get out of that episode. I have a hard time believing that Starfleet would engineer these helmets, because what would they use them for?
Well, yeah, what else would you use it for?
It's not like you're seeing prisoners on Star Trek having these helmets slapped on their heads.
You know what? I think it's for people that are very sensitive to light while they sleep.
Okay.
So it's like their version of like a beauty mask, you know?
It's like the man, he's like the man in the iron mask.
That's what
here.
I thought too.
Yeah. I mean, it was bizarre. And it's not only that, can they see through it?
I don't think so.
So like someone would be like walking into walls?
Yeah. Okay. We keep this a family-friendly podcast, but I kept thinking of the Gimp from Pulp Fiction.
Right, right.
Maybe it's like their kind of version of like BDSM in the 23rd century. Like, I don't know.
I think it's really interesting. You mentioned we had Peter Green referenced on the last episode.
That's true.
Who was in The Mask, who played Zed, of course, in Pulp Fiction. And then
Zed's
now,
dead, baby.
That's right.
Zed's
and now we're dead. Talking about the Gimp from Pulp Fiction. So
Pulp Fiction, great movie.
Yeah, we need some sort of Bruce Willis reference next week.
We'll make it happen with the animated short treks coming up here.
Right.
Can we also talk about like this test here?
Sure.
So she's told she's been rejected.
Yes.
And Pike's like, hey, guess what? It's all part of a test. I'm going to tell this cadet you've been rejected from my ship, and then I want to play another test on her to see if, under extreme pressure, she's going to buckle under my commands.
Right.
And guess what? Your husband, the person you hold more dear to you than anyone else, he's pretty much going to die if you don't do what I say.
Right.
He even admits it's an inhumane test.
Yeah.
Does this not seem like the most sociopathic sort of thing you can do? I was thinking about like Cito Jaxa in The Lower Decks, where Picard brings her into his ready room and is just like, hey, look, so you've had a chance to redeem yourself after that whole Starfleet Academy incidents.
Yeah.
Why don't you go on a suicide run with this Cardassian like POW?
I think it's interesting that that's what came to your head first, because all I could think about was Wesley in the burning classroom or whatever and coming of age.
Yeah.
And it shows that like Starfleet has these really twisted tests. I guess I can say that the Pike one made more sense than the burning classroom, I guess. Does it? I don't even know.
I guess so. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Look at the positive stuff. It was cool to just watch like Pike be Pike, you know?
Sure.
Like I enjoyed that and them bouncing back and forth with regulations. This is why I could never complete Starfleet Academy, is because I'd have to memorize all these regulations, which...
I know. I thought that was something.
Yeah. Yeah. But they also reemphasized, remember in Q&A, number one was talking about how Pike views, you know, going tactical to be kind of a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
And they reemphasize that here with this attack that's going on. So they're building up the Pike character more and more.
Yes, I
can appreciate that.
Yeah, and I mean, a part of me wondered, like, should this have been a little longer? Because it just felt almost a little too rapid-paced. Like, it's only, I think, 7 minutes without the credits.
Yeah, and so my thought was, like, okay, so, like, she figures, or not, she doesn't figure it out. It's she's about to blow his head off with a phaser.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, simulation over, which is actually a funny moment,
yeah,
a moment there. And I was like, okay, so we've got, like, 5 minutes of that, and then she'll get to be assigned to the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I should add, only for the rest of the semester.
Yeah.
So it could be, like, what, like, 4 weeks on the Enterprise?
Yeah.
What does he care this much about one cadet being assigned to his ship? Like, do you picture like Ben Sisko putting Nog through a similar sort of test? Like, hey, your uncle's about to go bankrupt unless you disobey the prime directive.
Well, and are they doing this for every cadet? I can't wait to see Tilly's.
Yeah,
that should be really fun.
I want to see how she really comes out of her shell in that short Trek Q&A flashback. Or not Q&A, but that short Trek flashback.
Yeah, no kidding. We did an episode a while back. I don't remember what we called it, but it was about Star Trek captains as mentors.
Yeah, I think we called it that.
I think we actually had a funnier title, because I think we really struggled with the title, and we came up with the title after we'd recorded the episode.
Wasn't like, oh, Captain... Be My Captain or something.
Something like that.
It was like
yeah.
a reference to Dead Poets Society.
Right.
Anyway.
And we talked about sort of the leadership styles of all the captains and how they encouraged those below them and trained you know, their staff and everything. What did this teach us about Pike? Did it teach us anything?
It said that he's okay with people not bowing down at the altar of Pike.
Yeah.
What if one Jellicoe... Mm-hmm. was to enact an exact same test. Would that mean that he'd kick this cadet off of his ship for like a semester then?
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, because this doesn't seem applicable, what Pike does in this, to a lot of other captains.
No, it doesn't.
Like, it seems very specific to him, but it also, to me, doesn't bring out his best qualities.
No, he
even
admitted...
He's not a good actor.
he even admitted it was inhumane.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's just, I think this is a, okay, let's talk about this, like, narratively.
Yeah.
It was a fundamentally flawed sort of storytelling device in that, like, we weren't, like, I wasn't with it. You were sitting there bouncing with these thoughts bouncing around in your head about, like, how you thought it was just nothing but deception. So we knew that something wasn't right.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, and so we found it distracting then.
Yeah.
So it's just...
Yeah, I never took it for a single second at face value that the Tholians were attacking.
This one just doesn't work for me. Like, I can go back and watch, like, Runaway.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, I get what they're doing with that. And
you get an introduction to Poe, who does play a role later in the season. So there's a little bit of value there.
I think this is the weakest short Trek that we've had yet, by a wide margin, too.
Although, not according to IMDb.
Really?
Yeah, well, no, they actually like this one. It was Trouble with Edwards rating has plummeted through the floor.
That might be my favorite short Trek.
Well, shows we are not on the same board as the IMDb people.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know.
No skin off my back, by the way.
Yeah, to me, this just felt like a piddly little thing. Like, this, to me, had zero impact in any way. And let's just take it maybe as we said, the story didn't really work for us. Did this work as an introduction to the character Thera Sidhu?
I would say yes, it does.
Yeah.
That last moment, okay, we get to see the 1701 engineering for the first time in the updated Discovery universe, though. Which,
it had repair bots.
It didn't quite look the same way that I remember Scotty having it.
Hasn't changed a bit, Tyler.
Okay, well, maybe it goes through a bit of a refit in the ensuing like 7 or 8 years until we get to Scotty's era there. But that look on her face when she just gets to bask in being in main engineering,
yeah,
I dug that. You know, I thought that was a cool moment. If Sidhu shows up again, I'm down for that too. I think this is like maybe my memory might be wrong. Maybe only the second time we had like a South Asian person playing a South Asian person in Star Trek.
Hmm.
So it's like, which like accounts for a much larger portion of the human population than say Northern Europeans, which you see quite prominently featured on Star Trek. So
right.
I like the diversity that they're introducing here. I'm down to see more Sidhu in one way or another. I just don't think she was given the best material to work with in this, because she also kind of seemed like shocked that this could possibly be like a test going on.
Yeah.
You know?
But did this build her up as a character? Not really.
The engineering stuff did.
Yes.
The prison stuff did not.
Right.
Yeah, so I was kind of bummed out by that.
Because the only way I could justify the existence of this thing, other than, you know, content to fill up my time, and do I really have that much right to complain about a 7-minute webisode?
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, the only value I can see in this is if there is a Pike spinoff and she's an ongoing character.
Yeah.
So we can go, oh, kind of like Poe, we can kind of flash back to this and go, oh, well, that gave us a little bit of context that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
But we have, so far, no greenlit Pike spinoff and no cast on top of that. So unless that happens, this feels like this really weird, tossed off kind of thing.
At least we do get some more moments with Spock, number one. What did you think about their moment in the transporter room, though?
I enjoyed that. I like number one doing the eyebrow raise.
It was pretty good, you know? Yeah. And you can kind of feel that dynamic between Spock and number one that's developing.
Yeah.
Rebecca Romijn and Ethan Peck have chemistry.
Yeah.
He has chemistry with, or I should say Anson Mount has chemistry with those actors as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cam, they're just torturing us by not, like, announcing a Pike spinoff at this point, because they work so well together. It's like capturing lightning in a bottle. The sets are built. You have all the actors flying up to Toronto to do these little short treks. It's like, stop torturing us, CBS. Like,
yeah.
We all want to see this. We don't necessarily want to see Ash Tyler's Section 31 spinoff. I'm just saying that for a fact.
Although he's not even announced as being on that. seems like that would be the case.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just found this frustrating in a way, in that I think there's so much potential to what the short treks can be, and we've seen it. They've shown it to us through, even last season, through like the Harry Mudd one or the Saru story.
Yes.
Like, they've done interesting things, Calypso as well, by significant margin as well. And in this new season of season two, we've had two really, I think, interesting ones. We can bounce back and forth whether Q&A was as great as some of the ones that come before, but at least it was doing its own thing and it was interesting and had an interesting angle on its, you know, number one in this case. Trouble with Edward, we liked. It was doing some original stuff. We've got two animated ones coming up that you can pretty much guarantee are doing their own thing, are going to be interesting in some way, if only because they're animated, which means they're going to kind of have their own vibe and tone. Whereas, like, what does this feel like when you get to kind of the end of the road? It's, I hope to God the Picard short trek isn't like this.
I have to believe that maybe they're saving up all their budget that they did not spend on this one for Picard. Like, the thing is, I think they know that they need to do, like, a cool Star Trek Picard short trek, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually going to feature Patrick Stewart, but if it kind of sets up where we are in that stage of the 24th century, whether it's, like, did you notice the name of the Picard Star Trek?
No, I can't remember. I mean,
it's something along the lines of like Sons of Mars, which tells me it's probably like a Romulan centric sort of short trek.
Right.
So I am curious about that, you know.
That has a very like John Carter sound to it.
John Carter of Mars.
Yeah.
I don't think it was in reference to the planet, but the...
No, but the original book was Princess of Mars. And so whenever I hear of Mars kind of attached to things, it gives me that kind of old pulp sci-fi kind of vibe.
I can buy that. So, I don't know. Cam, this is probably the most forgettable short trek yet.
Wait, what are we talking about, Tyler? What happened? I sat down here. What have we been talking about for a few minutes? Barely remember.
Maybe you should take that mask off your face, Cam, and start paying attention. It's been really weird having to stare at you with this big black mask all over your... So.
Do we see that mask again?
I hope so. I want to see cosplay at next year's Star Trek convention of people...
Oh, my God.
...wearing that mask.
Ooh, here's a question. Is that mask something we might see on a Section 31 show?
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, we know Empress Giorgio. Yeah.
How depressing is it for this short trek that the most interesting thing to talk about is that mask?
Yeah, it's kind of depressing.
Yeah. So. Although it kind of had that nanobot thing that we see in so many superhero costumes now, where the helmet just kind of, you know, happens.
That seems so dumb, though. It's like, it'd be much cheaper, more economically sound to just literally put a velvet mask over his face.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in Star Trek, it's an embarrassment of riches when it comes to technology, so they can kind of just do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And so, why not have the, nanobot helmet or whatever it is?
Okay, so why don't we segue the conversation to something I think we've been going back and forth about. We're debating whether we'd have, like, a full episode devoted to this, but I think we can just kind of tackle...
I knew as I was watching it, we were not going to have a full episode dedicated to Ask Not.
I was genuinely shocked when the episode ended at the 9.5 minute mark, and I was just like, okay.
Yeah, one actually, maybe finishing note on this, I just want to mention actually that I didn't mention earlier. This was written by Kalinda Vasquez, who was a producer and writer on like Once Upon a Time. She's done Fear the Walking Dead. This is someone with some actual credentials to their name. It was weird to see someone like that with a pretty significant track record in TV attached to do something so small and essentially kind of meaningless.
Well, Michael Chabon did Calypso.
Yeah, which was its own thing and actually had its own story to tell and felt like it was much more of a personal thing maybe for him.
But I would say that she would probably have to be a Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
And she was probably given the mandate, can you do like a single set like two-hander. We just got out of the movie The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
With Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, the only speaking roles there.
Right.
That's what you call a two-hander there.
Yeah.
This was not The Lighthouse, I'm I'm sad to say.
No, that's true. And we should just note, too, it was directed by Sanji Sanaka, who is a music video guy and has done, like, Mary J. Blige videos, Alanis Morissette, all these sorts of artists. And I thought it was very interesting that they gave him the one that was the least musical.
I just think that they went into this with the best of intentions, but yeah, just execution, it just did not click. And
yeah,
I can't fault them for this. That's what I love about the short track, though, is you get to experiment.
Yeah.
This was maybe a bit of a failed experiment, but look, we've liked the vast majority of short tracks.
So yeah, the majority for sure.
I can't complain about what they're doing here.
Yeah.
And so what I was thinking, you know, just before you came over to record this, Cam, is that, you know, what if... we had short treks. Let's pretend there's a universe where there's no Star Trek Discovery, no upcoming Picard or Lower Decks.
What Section 31.
Don't remind me. What if it's just one short trek a week, 52 weeks a year? Like CBS right. is pumping out all this content and you get to like genre hop. I don't think it's economically sound because think about the sets or like, are you going to do everything on like one set? I don't know. But it's operating within the Star Trek universe, having a lot of fun with what this universe has built. I don't think it's something that the CBS, you know, business model would ever support, obviously.
They're not serialized like Dick Tracy serials or something, are they?
No, I mean, but like, what if there's like, you know, once a month, there's like kind of an ongoing arc and you're otherwise bouncing across this Star Trek universe that's been created over the last 50 plus years. Like, I think that was kind of an interesting thing, but it got me thinking about kind of the oversaturation possibility of Star Trek. We saw that in the 1990s. I fell victim to that eventually. I eventually dropped off of Enterprise, even though it was the only series on at the time. But
well, you were really burnt out after seeing Insurrection 15 times in theaters.
How dare you? It was 23 times. Yes. But it's like my only concern, though, is I think we're living the best time since like the 1990s when it comes to Star Trek content right now.
Yeah.
But there is that oversaturation effect that could come into play where people have had enough and numbers dwindle and dwindle and dwindle. And we see kind of the rise of all these other streaming services. And I'm convinced that the CBS All Access model is sound. And like what they want to do is develop content libraries.
Yeah.
You know, that is the future of viewing there. But do you think that there is a bit of a risk of kind of oversaturation on Star Trek content? And I'm not talking in the next 2 to 3 years, but maybe in the next 10 years, if they keep pushing it out as much as it like, do you think Star Trek should be more of an event? Do you think there should be, you know, I don't know, 4 series on per year? Do you think it's like better if it's maybe 1 or 2 series per year?
You know, it's interesting that you bring this up because the other day I was reading, not to put this, your actual question aside, but just to say like, this kind of relates. I was reading about some of the upcoming Marvel TV shows that are going to be showing up on Disney Plus.
Right.
And Kevin Feige was talking about, well, you know, you're not really going to get all the understand the movies completely unless you, you know, watch these shows. And that got my back up, where it's like that's not what I want to hear. And they're saying, no, these TV characters are also going to show, or the streaming shows or characters are also going to show up in the movies and all that. And I went, it's a lot to ask us to see 3 Marvel movies a year in theaters, especially families that have to buy tickets, you know, to, like family of 4 or whatever. And now you're also bombarding us with this much more when there's already all these other franchises that are also expanding so much, you know, with Star Wars and Star Trek and all this sort of stuff. Like, you get to a point where you start to burn people out on content, even if they love it, you know, like
I feel like you're not so much a TV watcher,
right?
But like, I feel as somebody who tries to keep up,
mm-hmm.
it's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, it really is difficult. And at a certain point, like, I can find myself at points like I'm just watching something to get through it just right. So maybe I'm not left behind in the conversation, you know, and that's not necessarily like the thing I like most. This is why I much prefer kind of the week to week model for TV. I'm not a big fan of binge watching because I get to sit back and kind of absorb things for about a week, you know, and like that, I get so much more out of it that way. And I think if you're demanding that somebody watches WandaVision and Loki and, you know, the Winter Soldier and Hawk,
Moon Knight, She-Hulk. Like, that's the thing. There's like a dozen of them.
Yeah. But from a business perspective,
oh, yeah,
this is exactly what Disney wants, because every moment spent away from, say, the Disney Plus streaming service is a moment spent, you know, with a competitor.
Right.
So they want people absorbed in that screen time. They, you know, so I understand it from like a business model, but I don't like it as a viewer and somebody who consumes content like this.
Right. And taking it back to Star Trek, you know, you asked, do I think they could burn it out? I think what they're doing right now has been smart in that the series have their gaps, you know, where they air for their whatever, 3 months or whatever, 2.5 months. And then we get a break and then another one can start. I have no complaints about that. If they want to do that ongoing forever, that is completely fine for me. I think where you may get into some trouble will be when
With Edward?
Is where you start seeing some series piled on top of each other at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's where suddenly I might get a little annoyed. I mean, I'll still be watching it because obviously we're going to cover it for the podcast, but then how much am I actually enjoying it versus how much is it, you know, okay, I got to keep up to date with all the Star Trek stuff that's on the air. I've got, you know, 15 episodes of Lower Decks that just started. I've got Short Treks that are coming out. Oh, Picard Season 2's out. Oh, Section 31's coming out. Like, at a certain point, I am someone who's pretty much geared to follow these things. And I have a big question mark over my head as to how many people that are general viewers really care to keep up on all that stuff at a certain point.
I go back to what the business model is going to be.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily geared towards the week-to-week viewers. It's going to be geared towards building these content libraries, which people will binge watch, and then they want to see, well, what's the next program? And so this is why I'm talking about not people getting oversaturated with the next like 3 to 5 years,
right,
but you know, within 10 years time, as you're just devouring these content libraries. So
and the thing is, they're
it's a weird situation.
But do you think they're just going to stop making Star Trek a few years down the road? Probably not. They're probably going to keep doing it. And so it's suddenly like that you've got this massive, assuming that they do start oversaturating the market, you've got this huge back catalog, but you're still pumping stuff out like crazy. So it's like, are people going to be digging back into that stuff? Some will.
If I can get into like larger macroeconomics, there is an assumption, and I don't necessarily subscribe to this assumption, though, that's a global recession will inevitably take place. I know people talk about like cyclical like economics and stuff. There's nothing actually saying that a recession is inevitable, but a lot of people are assuming like you can't keep uninterrupted growth going and going and going.
Mm-hmm.
So what's allowing Netflix to continue to pump out all the content that we're seeing there is cheap debt that they're able to finance this with. It's not because they've got like tons of profit coming in. Netflix is not with the tons of profit at all.
Right.
But they're able to pump this out with all this cheap debt that is available right now. And so at a certain point, let's say we hit a recession, they're not going to have access to all this capital to do so. So I think we will see kind of the pipes like easing off a little bit with regards to all these streaming services producing all this content. So we could come to a point where instead of having like 4 Star Trek series per year, maybe it's just 1 or 2.
Yeah.
You know, so which isn't the point that you were trying to make. Like, I get what you were saying as well, but it's just there's all these different like factors going on about kind of this potential for oversaturation. But the thing is, like, I don't know, are we getting oversaturated if we go into Netflix right now and we've got like 700 episodes of, you know, TNG and Enterprise and DS9 and Voyager and TOS? Like, people can sit there and like absorb all this content. And if maybe they're not in the mood for TOS, maybe they'll want to tune in for Star Trek Lower Decks later on. Like, I don't know. So I think I get it from a business perspective, but from a viewer perspective, are we going to be like one of those, you know, fans that will just be consuming stuff for the sake of consuming stuff to keep up, to keep pushing out our own content via a podcast? Like, and at what point are we no longer doing it for the love of Star Trek and just doing it out of a feeling of obligation?
Right. And because you know that when there is a new Star Trek show on the air, more people tend to tune into the podcast. That's just been the case so far with us, especially, you know, when Discovery launches a new season, suddenly, you know, we get a lot of extra ears that maybe are out there looking for Discovery coverage now. And so, yeah, it's like it does benefit us to have new series going, but I don't know, like, I am a fan of a lot of franchises and a lot of different things out there. And I don't think too much of any one of them is necessarily a good thing. It makes me get just tired of it.
Yeah.
And that goes for any of them. That's not just related to Star Trek or Marvel or whatever, Star Wars.
Well, and maybe if we can segue over to Star Wars, I don't know what to make of like kind of the current situation of the Star Wars movie franchise.
Because it's a mess.
Well, we had Bob Iger come out and say that, well, maybe we're putting out too much too quickly. I think that there's room for one Star Wars movie a year. I think that's a totally sustainable rate of pumping out these Star Wars movies. I just think that they ran into some walls with some of the quality or yeah, you keep coming back to saying how, like, if you watch a Marvel movie, they are distinct from one another, whereas, like, what are we getting that's oh so different from
at
some
least
of the
in
Star
terms
Wars
of things? Like genre or something, like, yeah, visually they Marvel movies tend to have a similar stamp, but yeah, you know, you've got like a Doctor Strange isn't necessarily like an Ant-Man. Yeah.
But they hit that wall with Solo, and mm-hmm. I think Solo
scared them a lot.
Well, the biggest thing with Solo, though, is like I think it was just really poorly marketed.
Yeah.
We watched it. We thought it was a perfectly watchable movie. We thought it was a weird movie as well. But I think they would have gotten much higher numbers if it was just marketed better. And I think that's the problem with a movie like that. I think Star Wars can sustain one movie a year. It's going to be weird to see what happens moving forward with the film franchise, because I don't think they have any real solid plans at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, but speaking of which, so Disney Plus, it launched within this past week.
Yeah.
I've caught the first two episodes of The Mandalorian.
I'll be watching them on my holidays coming up in a week or so.
Yeah, and I'm curious about what your thoughts will be. I'm not going to spoil The Mandalorian for anyone, but it is interesting how Disney is now kind of cluing into, like, let's get this content out there. We're going to get an Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff as well with Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
From what I understand, Mandalorian Season 2 is already filming at this point. First impressions over first two episodes. I sat there watching it, and the whole time I was thinking, like, this is rather pleasant.
Right.
You know, it's very simple storytelling, but they're creating distinct characters who you start to become invested in. But it didn't blow me away.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I'm not, like, I'll say it, like, I've never been a big Star Wars person. I enjoy everything that I've seen. Even, you know, kind of those sand discussions that Anakin will have.
Right.
You know? But it's I think the biggest compliment that I'll pay to it, though, is, like, they've mastered the tone of the show right out of the gate.
Right.
And, Cam, maybe I'll spoil what we're going to be tackling in our next episode, though, is we're going to do a Blu-ray review of Star Trek Discovery Season 2, as well as our kind of rewatch. And I think the show is still struggling with its tone, and it's struggled ever since episode one. And we like Discovery, but we've always been wondering to ourselves, like, what is this show about?
Yeah.
With The Mandalorian, I know exactly what it's about. Like,
yeah.
Within the first, like, 5 minutes, I got the tone. I got what the show is about. So props to those guys for getting it. And say what you want about Jon Favreau. He's a good storyteller, though.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think back, like, remember the first time you watched Swingers?
Yeah.
Written by Jon Favreau.
I saw that really late down the road.
Yeah.
That was not a movie I saw around the time of its release.
You know, same with me.
Oh, okay.
But when I did catch it, I was just like, this is a guy who knows how to write a story, who knows how to write characters that you're interested in.
Yeah.
I'm happy with what Jon Favreau is doing so far. I just need to critique it on this so far. It is a sausage fest.
Right.
It is a sausage fest.
Which is pretty typical of at least early Star Wars.
But
yeah.
We're now in 2019
yeah.
at this point, and it's just glaringly, like, awkward to see. And I think that will change down the road. We've heard some casting, you know, news, blah, blah, blah. But it just seems so weird to see something like this, especially, you know, Star Trek Discovery stands in stark contrast where they want the universe to kind of reflect what our universe is like. And
right.
So I think that's much more prescient way of anticipating what people would be looking for, viewing-wise.
I am curious. The Mandalorian, visually, I've seen, obviously, the trailers and everything, looks incredible. Like, it looks almost movie quality. Do you think that's going to have an impact on the pressures of, say, like a Star Trek series, where suddenly you've got, and I know that Kevin Feige has said, these Marvel shows are going to look like our motion pictures. Suddenly does Star Trek have to, and other genre shows have to raise the bar a bit because, hey, suddenly all the competition's looking a hell of a lot better than we are.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and good, because guess what? Like, competition, it's better for, you know, consumers. So, immediately, like, I think Picard and Discovery, they've already settled on their visual tone.
Yeah.
But moving forward, and I'm sure Star Trek Discovery has as well, but moving forward, if that, you know, inspires other Star Trek series to get even more cinematic with what they do, let's see it.
Yeah, because it does seem like audiences are choosing more and more to watch streaming television, and primarily it seems TV, over going to the movies, going to see something in a theater. And so at this point, it makes a lot of sense for these studios to be giving the motion picture experience at home, because with people's now having, you know, much significantly larger TVs than ever before, and 4K and all that sort of thing, which often is better than a lot of the theaters you go to. You know, we are blessed in Vancouver to have some really fantastic theaters, but I hear nothing but stories from people, you know, throughout the rest of North America and even like beyond that, who do not have the, you know, necessarily the quality staff to run the theaters, or the, you know, ability to actually just technically put on a good presentation. So I do hope that they start bringing a little more of this motion picture quality visuals to, you know, TV to get that audience.
And I think we're there outside of genre stuff. Like, I look at a lot of the prestige TV shows nowadays, and a lot of it just looks far more visually interesting than a lot of the movies that I see nowadays as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, props
it tends to be cheaper, though, with a lot of the dramas, at least.
It tends to be cheaper. Well, sorry.
Like, with a show like Breaking Bad, it's cheaper to make it look really good than when you're doing something like Star Wars, because there's a lot more effects work required.
Oh, okay. So, like, you're talking more about maybe investing more time in, like, say, the lighting versus, yeah, like, the VFX.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
So, okay, well, it's an interesting time, and just think when we started this podcast, there was, like, no Star Trek out there except for the odd JJ movie, and now it's like, are we at a point of risking oversaturation?
Yeah, that's not a conversation that we ever thought would be possible within, like, when we started the show 5 years ago.
We're like, whoa, two movies in 3 years? That's pretty scary.
Now we're afraid of too much Star Trek.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, you already teased it earlier, but what are we doing next time?
Yeah, it's going to be our Star Trek Discovery Season 2 rewatch / Blu-ray review. I think this will be a fun one to delve into, because we had time to kind of sit back and absorb it for the next few months. So this rewatch is actually, it'll be interesting to see how the show's impacting us now.
Yeah, because the going back and watching Season 1 Discovery on Blu-ray, you know, with a couple, you know, a few months removed from the actual initial airing, did have a real impact on how I perceived that show. So I am very curious to see how Season 2 Discovery holds up.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in visorless prison mask Smith.
Wow. You can find me at Reportin. That's R-A-P-O-R-T-O-N. N as in number one gives great side eye.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.